All right. This is week 42. The year is going fast. And this week, as we continue to finish up 2 Kings, we're in chapter 21, 22, 23, 24, and 25. And we're going to look at chapter 21 tonight. But our memory verse comes from chapter 22, and that's where we'll be looking Sunday morning as we look at that together. And chapter 22, verse 1 tells us about Josiah, and it simply says, 22, verse 2, he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and followed completely the ways of his father David, not turning aside to the right or to the left. And again, only a handful of the 40 kings of Israel or Judah is that said about. Well, actually, none of the kings of the northern kingdom is that said about, and only a handful of the kings of the southern kingdom is that said about. And we talked about one of those last week in Hezekiah, and we looked at both in here at Sennacherib and then Sunday morning when he was afflicted and told to get his house in order and prayed, and God gave him 15 more years. He was one of those, and then Sunday we'll look at Josiah, who is the last of those that this is said about. And so
I always thought it was interesting that the worst king, Manasseh, was between the two good
kings. Yeah. And ruled the longest. And so that's who we're going to talk about tonight, is Manasseh.
I always wondered, how in the world do you rule at 8 years old?
Yeah. we had two boy kings in Israel, and of course Josiah being one, and he reigned for 31 years till he was 40, and did a good job.
And my grandson Robbie would
be the same age as Adam. And now I could see Gabe running the country, but again, they had lots of help and good advisors and made right decisions, and that's what we'll find out Sunday. But Manasseh didn't, at least especially not early in his life. And so let's look at a little bit about Manasseh. And so turn with me to chapter 21. And he reigned, even though he was an evil king, he reigned longer than any other king of Judah or Israel. And and it's interesting that he reigned for 55 years, but in the king's material, he's only talked about for 18 verses. He's talked a little bit longer in Chronicles, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the verses in Chronicles. But you see where Hezekiah's talked about for three chapters and a shorter reign, and then Josiah talked about much longer, but Manasseh reigned longer. And so again, the things that we want to know more, and this can be important too. It's not necessarily the length of your life, but it's what you do with your life that impacts the world. And so we see that with Manasseh. And so let's look and talk about his wickedness. Now, Manasseh was, verse 21, Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king and reigned in Jerusalem 55 years. And his mother's name was Hephzibah. Now, let me remind you that that for this first part of this, Hezekiah is still king as well. But remember, Hezekiah's told to get his house in order, and then he's given 15 years, but we also don't know how that impacted his health. But sometime in that 15-year part, Manasseh, toward the end of it, that Manasseh begins to reign with at the same time with him. But that's again, but the total is 55 years. Verse 2, he did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the detestable practices of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He rebuilt the high places his father Hezekiah had destroyed. He also erected altars to Baal, and he made an Asherah pole. And as Ahab, the king of Israel, had done, he bowed down to all of the starry host and worshipped them. He built altars in the temple of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, "In Jerusalem I will put my name." In both courts of the temple of the Lord, he built altars to all the starry host. He sacrificed his own son in the fire, practiced sorcery and divination, and consulted mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the eyes of the Lord, provoking him to anger. He took the carved Asherah pole he had made, and he put it in the temple of which the Lord had said to David and to his son Solomon, "In this temple and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, I will put my name forever. I will not again make the feet of the Israelites wander from the land I gave their forefathers, if only they will be careful to do everything I commanded them and will keep the whole law that my servant Moses gave them." But the people did not listen, and Manasseh led them astray, so that they did more evil than the nations the Lord had destroyed before the Israelites. So, and we'll come back to that. But so Manasseh begins to reign when he's 12 years old. Some of that time is with a co-reign with his father, Hezekiah. He reigns for 55 years, so he lives to be 67, which for them was an older time. And rather than continuing, remember, Hezekiah was the first one that had torn all of the altars to the pagan gods down. He had gotten rid of all of the high places and done more than any other king since David to focus the people on worshiping Yahweh. But yet, the Hezekiah, when he becomes king, still rebuilds all of these altars. And he specifically, the writer of Kings specifically identifies them for us. He built one to Baal. As you, if you'll remember, of course, we know Baal from all that happened in the northern kingdom. Coming over with Jezebel and that worship there, the storm god, fertility, and mainly focus from Tyre, and then come south. Then the Asherah, which was part of the Canaanite worship and fertility god, and then the starry host would be the Assyrian gods. That had influence in, and you know, we've talked a little bit about the Assyrians. We talked about them a few weeks ago with the northern kingdom, and so the starry hosts were their gods. But the thing that we see here, not only did he build those altars at the high places around Jerusalem and allow and encourage people to worship there, he went so far as to build some of them in the courts of the temple. So as you're aware, and we would talk later in the New Testament, you've got the court of the Gentiles, the court of the women, and then the court where the men would enter. And so those were the three places that most of the people came, and really only the priest went inside the temple proper itself. And yet here he's got them building an Asherah pole, got them worshiping Baal, worshiping these Assyrian gods in the temple itself. And again, we see this here, and this is really important to understand, is that most of the time Israel's problem was not that they completely stopped worshiping Yahweh. The problem was that they became syncretistic in their worship. And that means, syncretism means they would combine the worship of Yahweh with the worship of other gods. And what do we know? God is the only God. He's the only one that deserves to be worshiped. And sometimes that's a hard concept for us to deal with, but the reality is that's what we face in today's world a lot. It's not that people say they don't believe in Jesus. And I even meet people who call themselves Christians but never go to church, but yet they'll also believe in some of these New Age ideas. They'll believe in spiritism. They'll believe in horoscopes. They'll believe in all sorts of other things and claim that they can still be a Christian. And that's what it was. It wasn't saying God's not real. And there are those people. But there are many more who practice like you see I hear out of Hollywood a lot, who won't deny Jesus, but they want to add a whole bunch of other options. And it's whatever you want to do at that particular moment. And they may go to a church when it's convenient or popular, but they won't ever say they don't believe in Jesus, but they want to believe in Jesus, and they want to believe in this, and they want to believe in that. And that's called syncretism. And that's what we saw the Israelites did. They kept worshiping Yahweh in the temple, but they're also worshiping Baal, and they're also worshiping Asherah. And so it's whatever works for the moment. And it's the truth is this, that's even more dangerous for us, because they think, and again, in our world, because I go to church once a year at Easter or Christmas, everything's okay, and then I can live and follow whatever God I want to every other day of the year, and I'll still be okay. But that's not how God works. God is a jealous God who demands our soul worship and our soul focus, and doesn't want to share us with anybody or anything else. And that's the problem the Israelites had. And then you hear just this list of things that he did. He practiced sorcery, he practiced divination, he went to mediums and spiritists, and all of the things that we would think about as being demonic, and that are forbidden in Scripture directly, and we've seen throughout the Old Testament, and yet he practiced those. And then probably the final straw for us is that phrase about his son, that he sacrificed one of his sons to the Canaanite god Molech in the fire and burned him in the fire to sacrifice him to the Ammonite god, Canaanite god Molech. And he did that in the Valley of Hinnom. And that's important, because we'll see the Valley of Hinnom, and this is where it starts to transition and take on a new meaning. And we see that soon with Jeremiah, right after this time of Manasseh, the Valley of Hinnom and his prophecy about it. And so the Valley of Hinnom is one of the valleys outside of the city of Jerusalem. And before this time, it was a very prosperous, fertile little place right outside of the city. But then it became, during the time of Manasseh, a focus of pagan worship and the sacrifice of children and those fires, that horrific act. Such that then, as God judges Jerusalem and the destruction under Babylon is going to happen, that the Valley of Hinnom becomes almost a mass grave site from the people during the siege of Jerusalem. So it becomes, again, a kind of cursed place because of that. Well, after they return from Babylon, nobody, because of this, nobody wants to live there or be associated with it. And so it becomes a garbage dump. And the way we read in the New Testament is that it has become a place where the fire never goes out. If you've ever been around smoldering fires, the big fires, and you got layers of stuff, the fire may burn. You burn, well... Not all of you, maybe, but growing up in the country, we burn trash piles. We burn big piles of leaves. And if you got too much stuff, it may be on fire underneath, but it just kind of smolders all the time. It takes a long time to burn out. Well, that's evidently what was going on in the Valley of Hinnom. And so here you've got the worship of pagan idols, you've got a trash heap that's on fire that never goes out, and then you've got a place where there was a mass grave, a pile of bodies that were dumped there after the destruction of the city. And so by the time of Jesus, all of this is there. And so Hinnom, the Valley of Hinnom, becomes a term called Gehenna. And that becomes a term that, language evolves. And so that becomes the term for hell because it's on fire that never goes out. And it's this anguish of these sacrifices and of children and all of those evil things that are associated with it. And so by the time of Jesus, that term has become a term that's used to describe hell. And so that's where it comes from. And so here we see the beginnings of that with Manasseh sacrificing his son to the god Molech in the Valley of Hinnom. And so all of these pagan worship, but again, it's this syncretism where they're worshiping God, but oh, they're going to worship this other thing too and think that it's okay. And God, it's not okay. And it causes, they do evil in the sight of God's eyes, and it causes the judgment that is going to come. All right, any question about those first nine verses?
I was just thinking we're so guilty of that today, syncretism. So many people do that.
Yeah.
And I think also that's why John 14:6 is so offensive, because Jesus is the other way, not any of those other things.
That's exactly right, you know. And I don't like to single her out, because there's probably lots of other things, but you know, one of the quotes that just grabbed my attention 20 years ago was Oprah Winfrey said, "I used to be a Baptist until I heard that God was a jealous God, and I don't want to serve any God that's a jealous God." And I'm just going like, you just don't understand what that means. That means he wants to have a personal relationship with you that's exclusive. He doesn't want to share you with anybody. It's not, doesn't mean that he's green with envy. It means that he wants you to be faithful to him, and he's going to be faithful to you. It's something you want to have in God. And they, people just miss it. But that's part of it, is that idea that I can share, I can have God, but then have all these other two, and it doesn't matter. And that unfaithfulness. And that's what we see in Israel, and I think that's what we see in our society today to a large extent.
I think that's interesting, just based information. Asherah was a god of sexuality and fertility.
Right.
Baal was a god of rain, agriculture, superiority, and prosperity. And Molech was a god of riches.
Right.
So they sacrificed their god for sexuality, they sacrificed their god for man-made prosperity, and they sacrificed their children for ungodly riches.
Yeah.
And even today, we fall into that exact same trap.
Yeah. And again, you know, we don't worship idols, but what is, you know, pleasure, money, power, those are the things that people go after. And those are the gods that many people in our country bow down to instead of bowing down to the one true God. All right. Let's look at verse 10. And the Lord said through his servants, the prophets, Manasseh, king of Judah, has committed these detestable sins, and he has done more evil than the Amorites who preceded him. and he led Judah into sin with his idols. Therefore, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I'm going to bring such disaster on Jerusalem and Judah that the ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. I will stretch out over Jerusalem the measuring line used against Samaria and the plumb line used against the house of Ahab. And I will wipe out Jerusalem as one wipes a dish, and wiping it and turning it upside down, I will forsake the remnant of my inheritance and hand them over to their enemies. They will be looted and plundered by their foes because they have done evil in my eyes and have provoked me to anger from the day their forefathers came out of Egypt until this day. And so God's judgment, and again we hear, and this is the second time, and I never got back around to talk about it before, but you caught that line that they had been so wicked, they had done more wickedness than the Amorites or the Canaanites before them. And you remember as we made this journey, we went back and talked about Genesis 15, where in the prophecy about the land of Canaan, that God tells Abraham that they'll go away for 400 years and not come back because the sin or transgression of the Canaanites, the Amorites, is not complete. And that when we talked about the judgment and the holy war that comes when they return, was in part God's judgment on them because of the atrocious evil things they were doing, the very demonic idol worship that they were part of that included child sacrifice and other things. And so that was some of the justification of why God had them wipe out the Canaanites and instructed them to, even though they didn't do it when they came back. It was his judgment on them for the atrocities that they were doing. And now what does he say? Now those people that he brought into that land, now what they're doing is worse than the pagans before them. I want you to think about that. And I want you to think about society and where we've come from and the stands that we've taken and yet in obedience to God, but yet now the things that generations before would have said, though that's pagan, now they've become acceptable for God's people to do. Not acceptable by God, but for each other. And so, wonder how God evaluates us. Does he say, your example is worse than the sinners from before? And so that call for us to be obedient to him. And so God says he's going to cleanse Judah and wash all of that sin away. And you got to like the terminology. Of course, he makes reference to Ahab and the northern kingdom, and he talks about the plumb line. Everybody remembers the passage in Amos, right, where Amos says, here's the plumb line, you don't measure up. So God is going to judge and punish the Samaria, the northern kingdom. Well, I want you to think about this here too. Now remember that happened, I know it's just a couple of chapters earlier, but that happened 25 years ago by the time this is happening, and Manasseh is starting to reign. And so they had that history of watching the northern kingdom worship Baal, watching the northern kingdom worship Asherah, and God's judgment on them for that and the destruction and the exile of Samaria. And instead of learning their lesson from what happened to their brothers, instead now they're following their example. And how often do we see that? You know, someone once said, a very wise person learns from other people's mistakes. Most of us learn from our own mistakes. We mess up and we say, I'm not going to do that again. Right? And some of us don't even do that. That's right. Some of us just keep going and keep doing and keep getting what we get. But very wise people learn by watching other people. And the illustration I usually have, you know, growing up in South Louisiana, I never was around snow or ice very much. And I was a teenager, 13, 14 years old. We had gone to Ridgecrest over Christmas break for a youth conference. And so we're up in the mountains there in North Carolina. And it's icy. And I'm walking up those hills on that ice. And I had this new, probably wasn't real leather, it's fake leather, but I was real proud of this cool jacket that I'd gotten specifically for that trip, brand new. And I'm walking with my hands in my pockets, and there's a girl about 10 steps ahead of me, and she slips on the ice and busts it, and I laugh at her, and I keep walking with my hands in my that coat pocket. And you know what happened, don't you? I slipped and busted it, and when I did, that hand ripped that pocket all the way out. And then I was hanging around Ridgecrest the whole rest of the week with a coat that had a missing part of its pocket and a big hole in the side of it for the pocket had been attached. So, anyways.
It was so funny after all.
It was. But you see, I didn't learn from her mistake. Yeah. And here's what happened to the Southern Kingdom. They didn't learn from the Northern Kingdom's mistakes. And so they did the same things. They followed those same idols, those same gods that weren't real. And then I like the way he describes it. God is going to look again after he says that about the plumb line. He says, I will wipe out Jerusalem as one wipes out a dish, wiping it and turning it upside down. And who knew? God said, I'm going to treat you like a dish in the sink. I'm going to wipe you out and turn you over and rinse you off and dump it all out. Clean you up.
Emphasizing how thorough the destruction would be.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to scrub you clean. And sometimes it hurts to get scrubbed, right? Mm-hmm. But that's the judgment that's going to come. And then look at verse 14. I will forsake the remnant of my inheritance and hand them over to their enemies. They will be looted and plundered by their foes because they have done evil in my eyes and provoked me to anger from the days that their forefathers came out of Egypt until this day. And he said, look, I've been patient with you. I've been patient with you. And actually, this is the late 600s. So for they've been, since he took them out of Egypt, it's been about 800 years. He said, I've been patient with you for 800 years, but I've had enough. I've had enough. And I've given you all of this and inherit this inheritance. And he's saying, I'm just going to give you over to your enemies. And you're going to be robbed and spoiled. And this judgment's going to come on you because you have been evil in my sight. And then verse 16 tells us about Manasseh's death. Moreover, Manasseh also shed so much innocent blood that he filled Jerusalem from end to end, besides the sin that he had caused Judah to commit. So they did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And as for other events of Manasseh's reign and all he did, including the sin he committed, are they not written in the book of the annals of the kings of Judah? And Manasseh rested with his fathers and was buried in his palace garden, and the garden of Uzzah, and Amon his son succeeded him. And so what is interesting about that, and of course it doesn't tell us here, but the chronicler in Chronicles gives us more information about him. We find that really in chapter 33. And it tells us there about Manasseh being taken captive by the Assyrians to Babylon, and they're having some form of this is week 42. It's the year's gone fast, and this week, as we continue to finish up 2 Kings, we're in chapter 21, 22, 23, 24, and 25, and we're going to look at chapter 21 tonight. But our memory verse comes from chapter 22, and that's where we'll be looking Sunday morning as we look at that together. And chapter 22, verse 1 tells us about Josiah, and it simply says, 22, verse 2, he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and followed completely the ways of his father David, not turning aside to the right or to the left. And again, only a handful of the 40 kings of Israel or Judah is that said about. Well, actually, none of the kings of the northern kingdom is that said about, and only a handful of the kings of the southern kingdom is that said about. And we talked about one of those last week in Hezekiah, and we looked at both in here at Sennacherib and then Sunday morning when he was afflicted and told to get his house in order and prayed, and God gave him 15 more years. He was one of those, and then Sunday we'll look at Josiah, who is the last of those that this is said about. And so,
I always thought it was interesting that the worst king, Manasseh, was between the two good kings.
Yeah. And ruled the longest. And so that's who we're going to talk about tonight is Manasseh.
Always wondered how in the world do you rule at 8 years old?
Yeah. we had two boy kings in Israel, and of course Josiah being one, and he reigned for 31 years till he was 40, and did a good job.
Imagine my grandson Robbie.
They'd be the same age as Adam. And now I could see Gabe running the country. But again, they had lots of help and good advisors and made right decisions. And that's what we'll find out Sunday. But Manasseh didn't, at least especially not early in his life. And so let's look at a little bit about Manasseh. And so turn with me to chapter 21. And he reigned, even though he was an evil king, he reigned longer than any other king of Judah or Israel. And it's interesting that he reigned for 55 years, but in the king's material, he's only talked about for 18 verses. He's talked a little bit longer in Chronicles, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the verses in Chronicles. But you see where Hezekiah's talked about for three chapters and a shorter reign, and then Josiah talked about much longer, but Manasseh reigned longer. And so again, the things that we want to know more, and this can be important too. It's not necessarily the length of your life, but it's what you do with your life that impacts the world. And so we see that with Manasseh. And so let's look and talk about his wickedness. Now Manasseh was, verse 21, Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king and reigned in Jerusalem 55 years. And his mother's name was Hephzibah. Now, remind you that for this first part of this, Hezekiah is still king as well. But remember, Hezekiah's told to get his house in order, and then he's given 15 years, but we also don't know how that impacted his health. But sometime in that 15-year part, Manasseh, toward the end of it, that Manasseh begins to reign with at the same time with him. But the total is 55 years. Verse 2, he did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the detestable practices of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He rebuilt the high places his father Hezekiah had destroyed. He also erected altars to Baal, and he made an Asherah pole. And as Ahab, the king of Israel, had done, he bowed down to all of the starry host and worshipped them. He built altars in the temple of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, "In Jerusalem I will put my name." In both courts of the temple of the Lord, he built altars to all the starry host. He sacrificed his own son in the fire, practiced sorcery and divination, and consulted mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the eyes of the Lord, provoking him to anger. He took the carved Asherah pole he had made, and he put it in the temple of which the Lord had said to David and to his son Solomon, "In this temple and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, I will put my name forever. I will not again make the feet of the Israelites wander from the land I gave their forefathers, if only they will be careful to do everything I commanded them and will keep the whole law that my servant Moses gave them." But the people did not listen, and Manasseh led them astray, so that they did more evil than the nations the Lord had destroyed before the Israelites. So, and we'll come back to that. But so Manasseh begins to reign when he's 12 years old. Some of that time is with a co-reign with his father, Hezekiah. He reigns for 55 years, so he lives to be 67, which for them was an older time. And rather than continuing, remember, Hezekiah was the first one that had torn all of the altars to the pagan gods down. He had gotten rid of all of the high places and done more than any other king since David to focus the people on worshiping Yahweh. But yet, the Hezekiah, when he becomes king, still rebuilds all of these altars. And he specifically, the writer of Kings specifically identifies them for us. He built one to Baal. If you'll remember, of course, we know Baal from all that happened in the northern kingdom. Coming over with Jezebel and that worship there, the storm god, fertility, and mainly focus from Tyre and then come south. Then the Asherah, which was part of the Canaanite worship and fertility god, and then the starry host would be the Assyrian gods that had influence in. And you know, we've talked a little bit about the Assyrians. We talked about them a few weeks ago with the northern kingdom. And so the starry hosts were their gods. But the thing that we see here, not only did he build those altars at the high places around Jerusalem and allow and encourage people to worship there, he went so far as to build some of them in the courts of the temple. So as you're aware, and we would talk later in the New Testament, you've got the court of the Gentiles, the court of the women, and then the court where the men would enter. And so those were the three places that most of the people came, and really only the priest went inside the temple proper itself. And yet here he's got them building an Asherah pole, got them worshiping Baal, worshiping these Assyrian gods in the temple itself. And again, and we see this here, and this is really important to understand, is that most of the time Israel's problem was not that they completely stopped worshiping Yahweh. The problem was that they became syncretistic in their worship. And that means, syncretism means they would combine the worship of Yahweh with the worship of other gods. And what do we know? God is the only God. He's the only one that deserves to be worshiped. And sometimes that's a hard concept for us to deal with, but the reality is that's what we face in today's world a lot. It's not that people say they don't believe in Jesus. And I even meet people who call themselves Christians but never go to church, but yet they'll also believe in some of these new age